The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. With the World Series starting tomorrow night, Pedro Gomez with ESPN. Been there for 30 years covering the major leagues and big part of ESPN's program. He will join us from Fenway Park here in about 15 minutes. Right there with the Red Sox. He's going to be sitting down with Red Sox players this morning. Red Sox-Dodgers, a terrific World Series. So we will talk with Pedro. I wanted some time today because there's a lot that happened since we were together last. I'm not going to sit here and do the Cardinals offensive coordinator for an hour. If you're looking for that, go elsewhere. There is some of it that I want to get to. Yesterday was just really interesting NFL football for me. The last few years, if you've watched this show, you know that many Sundays and Mondays I would put up content or sit here and just be like, what is going on here? The quality is not good. The whole anthem protest stuff, the whole idea that the Cardinals were interesting. They were a fading, aging team. I've been on that side of the street for a while, and this year with Josh Rosen being inserted into the lineup, I'm much more pleased with what I'm seeing. To see Christian Kirk and Josh Rosen play catch and the Cardinals get their heads kicked in, this is what happens when you go through rebuilding and retooling. Obviously, there's a lot that I didn't like and that I have seen that was just like, wow, this is putrid. This is bad. The football yesterday was pretty good. It was. I mean, there were moments I went out to a public place, hung out with my wife and my son, and we're having lunch, and these Eagle fans all around us were completely losing their minds, and it was a terrific finish to the game. I was with a group of people last night, and the way that the Saints game ended, people are, I don't believe what I just saw moment. The same thing with the Cowboys and how they played with both hands around their necks, or if you're a Cowboys fan, yeah, the officials jobbed us, of course. That's how it always is for Cowboy fans. Needless to say, it was a really interesting weekend. I haven't seen the numbers yet today. I'm assuming the numbers were really good. I know the numbers Thursday night were good because the Cardinals were garbage. They were a dumpster fire. There's nothing I can say about them on this show as the whole body of work other than, yeah, to fire Mike McCoy at this point. Oh my gosh, Mike McCoy has been fired. What are we going to see different out of this team? Look, it's the 49ers coming to town, and then it's a bye week. Wake me up when they go to Kansas City and they play somebody who really could kick them all over the field. Really kick them all over the field. And that's coming. That's coming. It's not going to turn around overnight. Opening comments brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Make sure that you are up to speed with life insurance. Have you ever checked into life insurance for your family or an annuity? If you didn't come home tonight, would everybody be covered? Would all your dreams still come true for them? Hate to be so straightforward, but that's how you need to be for something as serious as this. Log on to SagicorNow.com. SagicorNow.com. You've got to protect what matters most, guys. Just plain and simple. What are you waiting for? That's with Sagicor. Pedro Gomez here in a few minutes. All right, so the Byron Leftwich era takes over. Are they going to revert back to what Bruce Arians was doing because Byron Leftwich was here? That all sounds well and good, but then what does that say on Steve Wilks' side of the street? Are they going to revert back defensively to what they were before Steve Wilks got here, where there's guys that are not out on the football field, Deion Buchanan being one of them, or has Robert Dimdicci reached his ceiling? You know, you look at the way that they've gone with their drafts with Hassan Reddick. He has not panned out. These are all first-round picks. And so the heat is going to start being focused squarely on Steve Keim. Steve Keim is in a position where when things go right, everybody loves him, everything is great. I personally know Steve. I wouldn't say I know Steve inside and out. I do know him personally enough that we're at places together. Let's just put it that way. And part of me wants him to do well, but here's the reality of the situation. You have to put all that stuff aside. I'm not going to sit here because somebody took me out on their yacht and I'm just going to go on the air and pretend like I've got everything all figured out, even though I'm being spoon-fed by every corner of an organization. That's not happening. So in the case of Steve Keim, yeah, he's done a nice job. He's done a great job in getting this team turned around after Rod Graves. But Rod Graves is no longer here. It's all on Steve Keim. It's nobody else. Nobody else. And so when the idea that Michael is tied to Steve and Steve and Michael have been together for so long and through so many years and through thick and thin, These are the Cardinals. These are the Bidwells. It doesn't matter the last name of the person. If there is not progress being made, Michael's not going to let the ship go down with him on the top of it. It's not going to happen. He'll stand up in front of the podium and say, it's on me, it's on all of us, it failed. But Steve will be gone. That's just how it is if this thing doesn't get turned around. If they finish with one or two wins, Steve will be gone. I can't imagine that Michael and Steve together would collectively say, man, did we crap the bed on Steve Wilks? We're going to fire him 7 weeks into the season or 10 weeks or whatever it is, or after 1 year. You cannot have that in this league unless they completely, completely whiffed. And if they did, that would be an embarrassment and a black eye for an organization that likes to stay away from that sort of thing. This will be three straight years the team has not made the postseason. We tend to forget that. We want to cheerlead. We want the hometown team to do fine. I'm good with that. But when things are bad, you say they're bad and you move on. To think that firing Mike McCoy is suddenly going to make the defense tackle and guys are just gashing them and running at will. So I watched the Rams game yesterday. This leads me to the Rams and the 49ers. I watched the Rams yesterday, and we remember when Jared Goff couldn't play dead. Todd Gurley was getting hurt. They couldn't do anything right. And now you look at the Rams, and they went through a couple of years of growth and development. And you look at where they are, and you look at where the Cardinals are. The Cardinals have a young quarterback. He's getting his head kicked in. The Rams had to go shake things up in a big way to go find wide receivers that nobody else wanted or that they felt like, you know what, we can bring Robert Woods here and he'll turn into something good. They had to draft Todd Gurley high, much like the Cardinals have a running back in David Johnson, but David Johnson, the same running back. They had to build the offensive line. They had to have imagination at play calling. On the defensive side of the football, you look at the Rams and they have Aaron Donald. No one else has Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald, every August, does a very smart thing. He doesn't show up to training camp. And every August, the Rams talk about how frustrating it is. And we all know the game behind the game. Who cares about August football? That's why I sit here and pound away every week on that stuff. And what happens? It doesn't impact team chemistry. That stuff's garbage. Oh, team chemistry, they need to get together. No, it's Aaron Donald, and he's going to run you over. And it helps to have Ndamukong Suh alongside of him. So I'm watching the Rams. They're blocking punts on special teams. They bring Greg Zuerlein back because he's been hurt. And Greg Zuerlein's merely one of the best kickers in all the game. So all they do is simply go out and take care of business. They find a very good coach. They are now in a sports market. If you're in Los Angeles today, just in L.A. today, you've got to talk about doing this job. Or if you're a fan in L.A. today, you got to talk about Chris Paul getting tied up with Rajon Rondo and Rondo spitting on him in LeBron James' debut. You have the Rams looking like a Super Bowl team because they are undefeated. And we know this, front runners run very far out in front in California. So for an undefeated NFL team, forget it. They're just on their way. The college teams, if I would have told you today that UCLA at Utah this Friday night would be a decisive game in the Pac-12 South because Chip Kelly was smart enough to take the pipe the first 5 weeks and just play a whole bunch of freshmen, and now he's undefeated. Yeah, it was by a point. Yeah, they barely got by the U of A. Yeah, I expect Utah to beat them, but Chip Kelly's playing for first place. Nobody else in the conference is. He's actually in first place today. They have a hockey team over there that people are interested in. They have all these things. We're sitting over here with one of the worst teams, one of the worst teams in the NFL. We have one of the worst teams in the NBA. In fact, probably the worst team in the last 7-8 years. We have a hockey team that is sitting here that is barely circling the drain, that's just trying to pull themselves up out of the abyss. Everything is about LA today. So I'm watching the Rams yesterday thinking, man, they are so far ahead of the Cardinals. And when they played them earlier this year and kicked them all over the field, they're young. They're set up for a long, long run of success. But they were aggressive, and they got after it. Steve Keim has been aggressive, too. Steve Keim went out. He got his Ndamukong Suh. He got Chandler Jones a few years back. And that's been a very good move by Steve Keim. You've got to balance out here in Arizona in the next, what would it be, the next 7 days. You have to balance out of, okay, We could keep Chandler Jones here. We could keep Larry Fitzgerald here. We just signed David Johnson to a huge contract extension. We can go right down the path, and we're not that far away. Or it's we're not even close. And what are we going to do with these guys? You're better to implode like the Rams, but you better make sure you hit on the Todd Gurley rather than miss on the Robert Kimdiche. I watch Dallas. You know, every year I hear Dallas is going to be great. And I understand that the Cowboys bring ratings. Yesterday, the Cowboys-Redskins game, for those of us that have been around a while, usually the NFC games are played on Fox. Almost always they're played on Fox. So yesterday, the Cowboys-Redskins game was put over on big CBS. Jim Nance last week said on the air while he's doing a game, cannot wait to have the Cowboys-Redskins. We have not had that on the airwaves of CBS for years and years. And Jim Nance is great. We've had him on this show. But I want to puke all over my shoes when you start having the PR side come out. It's just a freaking football game with two teams. But they're going to drive numbers, okay? And it wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game. None of the afternoon games were great, in my opinion, until the final moments. I didn't think the Ravens-Saints game was a great game until about 3 minutes to go in it. For Justin Tucker to miss an extra point, I'm sitting there with my mouth agape. The fact that Justin Tucker said, I want to go in the locker room or actually go to the podium and handle all the media heat, says a lot. Yeah, I was into the NFL yesterday. It was good. I've been into the World Series. It's been great. And next, Pedro Gomez will join us from Boston, right there at Fenway Park, because tomorrow night's game one and Pedro's there covering it. He is next. Stay with us. Now let's turn our attention to the World Series. Pedro Gomez joins us. Where are you standing right now in World Series ballpark Boston? Where are you right now, Pedro?
I am walking up the ramp to the fourth floor.
Yeah.
Because that is where, at Fenway Park.
Yes.
That is where the media is meeting the Red Sox in this place called the State Street Pavilion. So each player kind of has their own booth, so to speak, that they sit at, kind of like the NFL Super Bowl day.
Got it. So you love Fenway, or do you just not like it? Because I've gotten mixed from people. There's people that are like, you know, all the nostalgia and all that stuff, nonsense, I hate going to Fenway. Or this place is awesome, this place is amazing. And you can't say you hate it because it's going to cause, you know, a ripple. So don't say that.
I would never say that because it's my favorite ballpark in all of baseball.
Why?
And it has been since I started covering baseball 30 years ago. I absolutely love the nostalgia. I love the fact that every single player who's been anybody in this game has pretty much played at this stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very few places that can say that. I would think Wrigley and here are the only ones.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw said the other night he's been at Fenway once. If I remember,
never pitched here.
Yeah, never pitched there, but he's been there once. So
yeah,
let's just get going on the whole idea of Dodgers Red Sox an advantage from Alex Cora versus Dave Roberts. Who do you give the advantage to in the manager's chair?
You know, it's such a different chair because in the American League, you know, the moves are almost predetermined. So for the games that are here at Fenway, you know, you've got the DH. There's no real double switching, nothing like that that goes on. So Roberts has not managed in the American League, but there's not a lot of brain surgery either on this side.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Roberts probably has a little bit of an advantage over Cora when it comes to managing in this series.
He could have Puig as his DH because he's either an all or nothing guy in the outfield. I mean, where are you at on that one?
I think we're going to see Puig in right field. The reason being, Fenway is the only park where you need two center fielders.
Mm.
You need one in center, but you need another one in right field because it's so enormous.
Mm-hmm.
Puig does cover a lot of ground. I can't imagine him not being in right field.
Because Bellinger has done, he's been all over the place, and and Cody covers a lot of ground too. I guess what I'm getting at is it gives, Dave's got some options there with his outfield, and it's just his lineup in general, because you can put Cody over at first base. So,
well, and I think because Sale is starting the lefty, we'll probably see David Freese at first base,
mm-hmm.
Because you want that big right-handed bat, who's been very good, by the way. he's been clubbing the ball. So I doubt that you won't see David Freese at first base tomorrow for game one. But Bellinger, somewhere in the outfield, he'll be one of the few lefty bats that plays tomorrow. I think Jock Peterson probably starts the game on the bench, but we'll see him come in. And that's why I think we will see Puig in right field.
Pedro Gomez climbing stairs. It sounds like you're on a stair climber a little bit in Fenway, getting ready for the World Series tomorrow night. The Red Sox will win this series because why?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
The Red Sox will win this series because?
Because their offense just clubs Dodger pitchers into the ground. They can hit with anyone. The thing is, they haven't seen this Dodgers staff. Mm-hmm. You know, Kershaw's never pitched at Fenway. Hyun-Jin Ryu has never pitched at Fenway. Walker Buehler has never pitched against the Red Sox. So there is that great unknown of these guys not knowing. And plus, you know, the Red Sox offense is tremendous. It is tremendous.
Yeah.
But again, that's kind of the wild card here. Can they continue to club against a staff that they know very little about?
Well, and there's this whole narrative, Pedro, of they won 108 games, but they played a lot of bad teams, and their bullpen's not very good. I've heard all that stuff.
It's leaky.
Yeah, but I mean, 108 games is 108 games. come on. I guess J.D. Martinez looks pretty good in a Red Sox uniform. He would have looked fine here in Arizona, but in all seriousness, he's just flat killed it back there. So I guess I look at Boston and say, okay, they've got everything in their favor. David Price in the postseason, we'll see. On the Dodgers side, why will the Dodgers win this series?
They're playing some really good baseball right now, and they absolutely believe that they can pull off this upset. And, you know, they have kind of embraced this new role of underdog, because don't forget, they did not have home field against the Brewers. They barely got into the postseason. They needed a big September in order to get in. And all of a sudden, they're playing a role that they've never played before, but they're embracing it. They like being the underdog for once. And I think that psychology could very well play up for them.
This is going to be a great World Series in my view.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Before I get you out of here, because I know you have work to do, let me just throw names at you real quick and give me an update or a thought. Patrick Corbin, what's his offseason look like in terms of where he's going to end up?
I would be very surprised if he does not end up in the Bronx pitching in Yankee pinstripes come next season.
A.J. Pollock.
A little bit of a wild card there. I think the D-backs are going to try to keep him, but if the money gets out of hand, then Pollock probably walks.
I've seen where, in my opinion, Derek has leaked to Bob Nightingale and John Heyman and others about trading Greinke and Goldschmidt this offseason. Do you anticipate both that to happen, both those to happen?
Greinke's going to be much more difficult. The money is just... It's an obstacle. When someone's making $34 million a year for four more years, that is an obstacle, a giant one. Or three more years, I think it is, right? Three. You know, Goldschmidt, absolutely. There's teams that would line up on that one easily because it's such a player-friendly contract. A team-friendly contract. So if you package them together, that could be one way, because you're saying, okay, you want Goldschmidt, great.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to take Greinke as well.
Yeah, no, I agree on that. And lastly, Bryce Harper, what's going to happen in this offseason with him?
My prediction, I'm sticking with it. I've said this a long time ago, the San Francisco Giants. And the reason I say that is because the Giants have always had a face of the franchise type player. They are missing that. Their star is dimming a little bit in the Bay Area. And let's face it, when they were at their peak, they had a left-handed hitter hitting balls into McCovey Cove, and Harper certainly would bring that phenomenon back to the Bay Area.
Good stuff there. Enjoy your time working away at the World Series. Pedro, thanks.
Okay, man. See you, Brad.
It's Pedro Gomez there in Boston. Dodgers, Red Sox, really interesting World Series. I've been captivated by the NLCS. I could not get enough of those games. It was must appointment. Actually, the person I sleep with, my wife, was just hammering away on me on the idea of we have to watch this game and let's get ready and let's make sure we have everything in place and we're going to shut down everything else going on. And it was fun. It was fun. So I'm looking forward to the World Series. On the other side, some college football I want to circle back on. And the Suns, the next 48, 72 hours are going to be really interesting. I'll explain coming up. Stay with us. All right, so this is a big week for the Suns. It's probably a week where they go 0-2 because they have Golden State tonight in the Bay Area, and they have the Lakers here on Wednesday. Just so you know, the Lakers are going to be in town. They do not play on Tuesday night. So I'm guessing that Tuesday, this could be a Scottsdale game for the Suns. Could very well be the dreaded Scottsdale game. You're going to have the Lakers running crazy in Scottsdale on Tuesday night. Under league rules, they're not permitted to fly in the day of the game. I mean, if they have a back-to-back, that's different. But they're not going to roll in at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm guessing somewhere there's going to be somebody. Eric, do you think Haley might be out on Laker watch?
There's a chance. There's a chance we're going to
She's in Scottsdale.
There. Yeah.
I mean, we could just tell her blank script. Head out to where you think the play, because you're out of that space.
Yeah, and knowing Haley, that's really not her scene. But
yeah, that's true. She's really a homebody.
She'd rather just hang out.
But
and watch Netflix.
Hears stuff.
She's in that space, that age demo.
Is Jordan in that space? Does Jordan go get crazy in Scottsdale?
I don't think so.
No, Jared doesn't get crazy in Scottsdale.
No. Or in any city, probably.
In any city. Jared, do you get crazy in any city? You know, Devin, you know, Mesa. It's hard to get crazy in Mesa. We love
Mesa.
All
work a lot, so there's not a lot of free time.
There's not a lot of free time.
We're a startup, so.
We do our thing. That's it. So the Lakers, their brawl Saturday night, it was a great day of college football. Not to rub it in on Eric, but Eric was down at TCU, and they got their heads kicked in by Oklahoma. It wasn't much of a game. There were some games that were interesting. I watched a lot of the Washington State-Oregon game. It was entertaining. It was entertaining. College game day was entertaining on Saturday morning. But, however, and then the Dodger game was going on, so I'm watching that, or as my wife would like to say, the L.A. Dodger game. She's totally into them. The Cody Bellinger parade, whatever. When you know people that are playing at the big leagues, like she does, she gets all wound up about it. But I'm sitting there just watching baseball, and all of a sudden my phone starts getting these, you know, your screen when something big happens just starts going notification and notification, notification. Like, okay, what's going on? And you immediately open up Twitter and you see Lakers and Chris Paul trending at the top. It's okay. I probably should flip over and see what's happening. And I did watch the first part of that game, and it was fine. It was nothing special. James Harden was doing his thing. LeBron had a couple great plays. I watched all the way up until halftime. I missed the end. Well, at the end of the game, the Lakers get into this brawl. And, of course, Rajon Rondo said, well, I didn't spit on Chris Paul, even though Chris Paul said he spit on him. And then the video conclusively shows, no, you spit on him. And Brandon Ingram decides, I'm going to get involved in this. He gets 4 games. And you watch LeBron, and he's just kind of standing around. And then he kind of pulls Chris Paul away from the whole deal. And before you know it, everything turns into Lakers and brawl. So this is going to impact the Suns. Long-winded way of getting to the Suns-Lakers on Wednesday night. Look, it's going to be LeBron walking out of the tunnel wearing number 23. He's not going to have Brandon Ingram with him. He's not going to have Rajon Rondo with him. It sets up very well for the Suns. They're going to be rested. They play tonight in the Bay Area. They'll probably get back with another loss alongside of them around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. They'll have a shoot around tomorrow afternoon, and then they'll shoot at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, and they'll play the Lakers Wednesday night. I'm happy that both teams are not in back-to-backs. This is good. This is good. Because when it is back-to-backs, it's a hard watch. And, the whole beat L.A. thing will be out there. I'm anticipating. I am not going. I'm going to the shoot around Wednesday morning. I want to talk to LeBron. So I'm not going to be here Wednesday morning. It'll be Jordan and Haley doing their thing, which is fine. But LeBron and the Lakers are going to be available Wednesday morning. I will go to that. Haley is going to go to the Lakers. And all we're anticipating out of Haley is a one-on-one with LeBron for 5 minutes. That's all that she has to do. Do you think she can pull that off, Eric?
No.
Simple?
Uh-uh. I don't at
Simple.
All, actually.
Just There's LeBron.
I think there's a very small chance that happens.
Very small.
There's, and that's no offense to Haley. That's just I speak in realism, and I speak truth on this show.
If I told you, you know, Wednesday, your only mission is to go get LeBron one-on-one for 5 minutes.
3% chance?
Oh, I'd even give it less than
2% chance?
It's like me. I'm going. I'm not going to get him one-on-one. Probably. It's not because of anything more than he's going to walk over and he's going to say he's really excited to be here and he's going to have sweat dripping off him because it's the end of their shoot around. It'll be right around 12 o'clock. And no, I'm going to try to weave in a couple different things on that. So this is a good week for Suns Lakers. Their game Saturday night against Denver wasn't good. They didn't play well. And they got their doors blown off and that's that. On the college football front, I am ready, and I'm going to write this week probably, but I'll just talk to you guys about it now. I'm ready for Manny Wilkins to be on the sidelines to hold a helmet, even though he gives them their best chance to win games still at ASU. I'm not hating on Manny Wilkins. Understand me. Those of you in Arizona State sports information that are going to run to Manny Wilkins and say, oh my gosh, Brad was hating. No, I'm not. It's much like when Rudy Carpenter was the same deal and people ran to Rudy and said, oh my gosh, I can't believe he was out. No, it's very simple. At some point, because all these quarterbacks have left and blown out of here, Brady White and Blake Barnett and Bryce Perkins, and it's just...
All of which are playing, by the way.
All of which are playing.
The school they transfer to.
And winning.
Yeah, they are.
They're going to... Virginia's going to go to a decent bowl, it looks like. Going into this offseason, this upcoming offseason, and it's going to be hard for Herm to make a bowl game. ASU's lost all these games by 7 points. They're close. They're much better off having Herm here than Todd, no matter what anybody writes. If anybody writes that they made a mistake, they didn't know what was going on internally over there. Herm's doing the right thing by playing freshmen. He's got, especially on defense, he's got some freshmen on defense that are going to be playmakers. Okay. The concern here is your quarterback is still very erratic. It's the best that you have. Manny Wilkins' story is everything that college should be about. Everything. He's been terrific. He's done the best that he can do. But anybody who's trying to protect him at this point on his accuracy is simply on the payroll and doesn't want confrontation, doesn't want things to change. Well, it's just the way it's been, and it's just... Yeah, and that's why you've been ranked three times in the top 10 since Jake Plummer left. On three occasions, you've managed to make the top 10 since Jake Plummer left because, well, it's just the way it's been. No. So because the cupboard is bare at quarterback, for now, you know, they have a JUCO, they have Dylan Sterling Cole, fine. They have two freshmen that are highly regarded. We'll see if they make it here. It's always that chance that guys decommit. They've offered Ben Finley here. I think that there's a couple of others that they should offer in state. It seems to me that this train with Manny's gone about as far as it can go. And you may say, well, Brad, they're losing games close. If you go back and look at his inaccuracies and what I've said for the last 2 years, what NFL people say straight up to me, straight up, they say, he's never going to win you games, never going to lose games for you. It's right there. The last play of the Stanford game, I don't know. You guys tell me. You got to know the game situation. You have to know the game situation. That's not a play that you run. Last play of the game. If Manny Wilkins doesn't fumble and N'Keal Harry doesn't throw a pick, ends up being ASU probably beat Stanford. Herm's coaching his ass off, in my view. And his staff, for the most part. I'm still not big on what's going on with the offensive play calling. I'm not. They're not that creative. And then you have a quarterback who's not accurate. Last week, Manny was seventh in the conference in passing accuracy. You got to be top three, in my view. If you're a senior and you've been doing this. So they play USC this Saturday. For now, the Trojans are saying they're going to play their third string quarterback. For now, this could be gamesmanship. But I'm just ready for the next page to be turned. The fact that in the Pac-12 South, there's one team that controls its own destiny. A very good friend of mine called me this morning and has covered this stuff for years and years and years and years and years. And he walked me through each scenario of teams within the Pac-12 South. And he said there is only one team All they have to do is just go win, and they are in the Pac-12 title game, and that's Utah. So if I would have told you, Eric, at the start of the year that Utah against UCLA this Friday night would be a game that would be decisive in figuring out the Pac-12 South, you would have said absolutely unequivocally, in my opinion, no chance.
No chance. But that just shows you the Pac-12 South, and that shows you how bad the bottom of the division is. And it's bad. I mean, it's bad. There's just no sugarcoating it. Colorado has come back to life. USC is Jekyll and
Hyde.
It's just
not good. There's going to be a change there,
U of A is not good. ASU is the king of close losses. UCLA, I'm not sold on them. They're not a good team. They've won a couple games, but there's no – you look at the top half in the North, take any one of those top four teams in the North and put them in the South, and they're running away with it.
No, no, you're right. You're
there's
right.
a difference, Brad, between parity and just average to below average teams, and that's what you're seeing in the Pac-12 South.
But I do think that on the UCLA part, both Chip Kelly and Herm did some smart – did. Two smart things. They both coaches did a smart thing, and that is they played true freshmen.
Of course.
And Chip just took the approach of, if I play these guys for the first 5-6 weeks, I might lose to Cincinnati in September. But here they are now, and yeah, they barely beat U of A. And if Rhett Rod doesn't throw some picks, fumble by J.J. Taylor going into the end zone, mm-hmm. which was just silly, U of A probably beats them, but they didn't. So close and horseshoes and hand grenades, as I like to say.
And I think with those freshmen, Brad, I bet it's a melting pot of some of the guys that Chip Kelly got late and some of the guys that committed under the previous regime. And the first year, you're trying to weed out who can play and who can't play.
Sure.
So throw those freshmen in the fire, see how they do, and go from there. I mean, this is, you know, it's Chip Kelly just can't come in and wave a magic wand and win a bunch of games when you're trying to play your offense with a bunch of guys that played in a completely different system. It just doesn't work like that.
Are you happy with where Herm has the program?
Yeah.
I am too.
I am. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the style that he's playing, but I understand.
When you say style, do you mean offensive play calling? Because I'm not big on Likens.
No, and just playing a college game at like an NFL game. I'm not a real big fan of that, but I understand why he's doing that.
Isn't that where the game's heading anyways?
No, I don't think so. No.
What's Alabama do? What's Clemson do? Don't you want to be them?
But they don't play. I'm talking about shortening the game. I'm talking about running the ball a lot. I'm talking about going on the road against better competition. And instead of letting bullets fly, playing it as close and conservative to the vest as possible, hoping to get to the fourth quarter with a chance to win. And the ASU has done that, but I don't necessarily – like, I love college football because it's so unpredictable. Like,
yeah,
we saw
sure.
it Saturday night. Who would have thought Purdue would have beaten Ohio State as badly as they did?
I mean, they just crushed them.
I know when I watch ASU, even when they're playing a better team, they're probably not going to win. But the script is going to follow the same pattern. We saw it against Stanford. We saw it against Washington. We saw it against Colorado. We saw it against, I mean, San Diego State, that's the team they should beat. But I'm talking about like upper echelon, power five, legitimate top 20.
San Diego State's pretty good.
Yeah, but again, you can't throw San Diego State in there with Stanford and Washington and Colorado. You just can't do that. They're fine. They're a really good program. They've beaten ASU the last 2 years.
Okay, so but don't you think that they have to run the ball because they know they have a quarterback that cannot hit the broadside of a barn consistently?
Probably.
And they have one wide receiver, and the other receivers have not really emerged. There's been drops by this receiving core.
But there's talent there.
And
they're really not allowing those guys to
play calling.
When you're dumbing down an offense. And,
like, you know, I look at the tight end, and they may not have a tight end in the program any longer because of a transfer situation, but they very seldom use the tight end, which is something you have to use them down the field. You have to be able to, in what I'm seeing out of them, because Manny is not that sharp consistently, Likens' play calling, trying to shorten the game is, well, we just got to run the ball better because we cannot trust our quarterback to win a game for us, back to what I said earlier. And because if any of these quarterbacks had stuck it out, I have to believe that this would be an open quarterback competition by now. I do. Because there's nobody for him to turn to that he feels comfortable with to say, okay, guys, we have to start playing for 2019 now. We have to start looking ahead to 2019. And they're not doing that. All right, back with more after this timeout. All right, before we get out of here, one last thing, and it actually was at the top of my list here locally. We've done a lot around Rising FC, and we're going to continue to do a lot around Rising FC. I had somebody send me a text Monday or Friday at a speaking engagement saying, why are you doing so much around Rising FC? Don't you think soccer is going to fail? And guys, if I didn't think it was going to work, I wouldn't spend the time and the resources in talking about what's going on with Rising FC. They won the other night. Drogba scored. It was an amazing goal by Drogba. The MLS was in attendance. All that is well and good. The better news is Rising will have another playoff match. This will be the semifinals of the Western Conference. It will be this Wednesday or this Friday night. Friday night at 7:30. And so they'll play Swope Park. They sold the game out. Yes, it was dollar beer night. I don't care. If people want to have fun, that's what they're allowed to do. The MLS was there. They saw a party. They saw a crazy atmosphere. Crowd was around 7,800 from what I've heard. That's outside of the sellout mark of 7,000. This week, it should be greater than that, I would think. So if you're looking for something, if you want to get plugged in on the soccer end of things, I know it's busy right now and what's going on in the market, but let's be straight with each other. You know, the Cardinals are heading nowhere in a hurry. Arizona State's just kind of hanging around out there. They're not really doing much. The Suns aren't playing Friday night. And this is one of those deals where, from our point of view, my point of view, I can't speak for the staff, but from my point of view, it's you take the local and you support the local, especially when they're just starting out, and they can be something really big. That's why we do so much on USL Soccer and Rising on the website. We put up a game story. I'll write a column every now and then as to where things are going. But we've been doing that consistently since we started this program. And I think MLS is close. It's not a done deal. I think there's still some areas behind the scenes that this group has to get straightened out. They've done a very good job. I've told them to their faces, you guys need to do this brick by brick. You cannot just race down the path and all of a sudden have the MLS show up here. But this coming Friday night at home, another brick for them as they try to get to the finals. And it's good stuff. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, as always, produces. Have yourself a great day.